Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
Eric Dawson, All Things Political. Today is Tuesday, May 31st, day after Memorial Day. Going to have an interesting conversation today. A lot of it is going to be centered around national politics, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton in California, what's going on, Donald Trump, big topic of conversation, and it's crazy how Donald Trump has almost for the entirety of the campaign since he announced has, as they say, sucked the oxygen out of the room. He is in the middle of all of the political things that are taking place. And so, it's really crazy. So, and then finally, we're going to have a young man join us later on to talk about the things that are going on in East Orange. I know we've talked about it before. That we've had folks protesting at municipal council meetings, collecting petitions, and they're getting ready to wage a serious effort to turn the public school system, or the Board of Education in particular, from an appointed school board to an elected school board. So I'm happy to see that I've got my main man, Eric Dixon, on the line joining me again. Mr. Dixon, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. Eric, and yourself, sir?
Hey, man, listen, I can't complain. Before we get into the business of politics, how was your Memorial Day, man?
My Memorial Day was wonderful, man. Family and friends got together. We cooked out and, you know, had libations of sorts and, you know, enjoy movies. It was really great. The kids running around. Remember, you know, back in the day, the kids were able to run around and be kids and, you know, get in water and, you know, do all of those kid things, and adults had their little spot. You know, today is a lot of, you know, conjoining with kids where kids are able to be in, you know, conversation with, you know, with adults and stuff. When we came along, man, you couldn't just walk up and know a group of adults and just get your thing off like these kids can today. You know, but it was like that. It was a real family environment, man. You know, I was the grill master, of course, and I put together a wonderful meal, and everybody got fat, dumb, and happy and watched the game last night.
Okay. And a heck of a game it was. I spent most of my time watching the watching Roots. You know, I watched the remake of Roots. You know, and I sat down with my kids and we did that. You know, I saw some stuff on social media where folks were trying to debate the value of reintroducing Roots to the millennials and, you know, some back and forth conversation. And so I'm going to plug Real Talk Radio. There's going to be a big conversation about that.
Huh? So let me ask you, was it more intense than the original? Technology moved it to where it's more in your face in this particular rendition?
Well, it was. And so, you know what I likened it to in terms of intensity? Actually, it wasn't even this intense because it was still for television. But do you remember, what was the movie Mel Gibson did, Something of Christ? What was that Mel Gibson
movie? Go ahead.
Right.
Christ's Passion,
movie,
The Passion of Christ, I think it was.
The Passion of Christ. In
right.
that movie, man, now, they've done movies of the crucifixion of Jesus, right, over
right.
the years. That movie, I'm going to tell you, I went to go see it. There were people, when they began to beat him, that got up and they were physically ill. That's how graphic it was.
Okay.
People
okay.
were weeping in the movie theater. Now, because Roots was on television, was on History Channel, they didn't go to that extent, but they were far more graphic than the original one. And what I say to people
is that when you look, if an older person, and by older I mean somebody my age, right, or a few years younger, who can remember Roots when it came out, if you look and say, well, I saw it already, it's not for me, I get that, but it wasn't intended for you. The guy who did the original one and then who did this one, he did it. The impetus, Eric, was that his son, who he tried to share the original one with, said, Dad, I'm not feeling it.
Gotcha.
He said, I'm not feeling it. It's not resonating with me. And so his dad and LeVar Burton and some other people sat down and said, you know what, maybe it's time to reintroduce this, or in this case, introduce it to the millennials, you know? I mean, like, look, Eric, let me ask you a question, man. You remember the old Batman with Adam West, right?
Correct.
If they had that planned in the movie theater, would you go see it?
Absolutely not.
You understand?
Absolutely
right.
not.
But
I might not even rent it for free. You know,
but the Dark Knight, you're going to go check out.
I get your point. I get your point. I get your gist, Eric. I mean, like I said, technology is such today that it can put something right in your face. And then, you know
exactly.
what, the arguments that, you know, were 20 years ago are different arguments today, even though we're arguing about the same thing, if you follow what I'm saying. So, yeah, you know, I would see that the promos that I've seen with the Roots, I wanted to see it last night, obviously. You know, I totally forgot about it. I was having such a good time with the family. But I could see where this is going to hit on different issues and, you know, where the original one, you know, hit on a certain set of issues. So, you know,
yeah,
I'm looking
for people. So the question is this. What I'm going to do, I know we were scheduled to do, you know, the national news first with Donald and Hillary and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But we've got this brother, Elijah, who's going to come on in a minute. So I just want to round this segment up by saying we have a lot of young millennial blacks who are not anchored properly in terms of what they're frustrated and angry about. Do you understand what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
You know, they're angry, but they don't know why they're angry, man. So they go aimlessly shooting and killing and robbing. I mean, they just have such holes in their souls, man, and they don't know what it's anchored to. And I'll tell you, you know, Roots was the beginning for, because my parents, you know, they didn't really talk a whole lot about, you know, black and white. I mean, you know, we early on grew up in the Nation of Islam, you know, before my dad, you know, separated himself and, you know, really didn't align with the, you know, those radical teachings. But, you know, but I was bow tied down, man, with parting the side of my hair on Bergen Street selling bean pies at one point. But, you know, when I got to be older and started trying to figure things out, you know, I was going to Maple Lines, man, and they had, and Roots came on. I was in a room by myself watching it. My father wasn't there, and they said parental, you know, parental guidance or whatever it suggested. Well, he didn't provide any, and neither did my mother. I watched,
that 76er shit.
Yeah, dude, I was hot. I was heated with my teacher, man. I had a white teacher in one of my classes. Oh, she caught it because I couldn't understand it, but I saw these white folks whipping on this slave, and I said, oh, wow. And it provoked me to read, you know, and to understand a little more. But if you ask the average young millennial out here, you know, to explain it, they'll say in a very cursory way, they'll talk about slavery, but they really don't have a clue. So,
well, you know, when Roots came out originally, I wasn't able to watch it. My mother wouldn't allow me to watch Roots, but one, because it came on, I believe, at 9 o'clock, and we were in the bed at that time. And then because of the content of what Roots was about, you know, she wasn't really sure, because it was at that censor, you know, on the razor's edge of being censored at that time. So based on, you know, talking about slavery and talking about rape during slavery and talking about all of the issues that, you know, our forebears have went through. But, you know, the kids today, you know, they have access to that anytime, 24 hours a day. First time I watched
Roots,
I had to go to the library, you know, to sit down for like 6 or 7 weeks or however long it was on a Tuesday night in Irvington to be able to catch the episodes of Roots. you know, because they had like a, you know, a film festival, and Ruth was one of them. So they would play, you know, a chapter every week. So that's how I first, you know, became, you know, contacted with the content that's involved with Roots. But, you know, that right there was something that kids don't do today. I mean, at least I don't see in a big way talking about their cultural, you know, upbringing. I searched it. I wanted to know what was going on with it. These kids have different outlooks on life, and, you know, that's not something necessarily that they're looking to look into. You know, they don't look into the degradation of their people. They, you know, they're looking to greener pastures or whatever have you. But, you know, that was something that was weird in my house. You need to know this history. You know, if you don't get it in school, you got to get it yourself. And if I can't teach you, you better find it yourself. So, you know, that's where I was with it. And even as a young man, I wanted to know about what that black history was about. But, you know, that's the end of that.
So what we're going to do now, watch me flip this. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be here with Elijah McCullough, I believe is his name. And the tie-in here is that even back then, you know, folks were being whipped for trying to learn how to read, right? Understanding that reading was the thing that was going to liberate them ultimately. And so here in East Orange, folks are arguing that they need to have a voice, a bigger voice and a more intimate voice in the election process or the appointment process of candidates on the Board of Education. Right now, it is it's an appointed board. They want it to become an elected board. And then there's some other issues around education that are going on. But I think we're going to be talking to Elijah mainly about you know, his efforts and the town's efforts in getting a referendum on the ballot to turn it into an elected school board. We'll be right back after this commercial break with Elijah.
Everyone likes data because when you have more data, you have more freedom. Freedom to do whatever. That's why AT&T is offering you 15 gigabytes for $100 plus $15 for each line. Because the more data you have, the more freedom you can enjoy. Freedom to post more memories, download more fun, and share what matters most with who matters most. 15 gigs of data for $100 plus $15 for each line at AT&T. What more could you want? I sure can't think of anything. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come in now and get the all-new LG V10, designed to capture, edit, and share high-quality video.
Pricing is monthly for service on smartphones on AT&T Next. Other pricing options available, overage monthly, and other charges and restrictions apply. See a store for details.
Welcome back to All Things Political. This is Eric Dixon and Eric Dawson. Dixon and Eric Dawson. Call in number 646-668-2232. We're on now with Elijah McCullough, correct?
McCullough, yes.
McCullough from East Orange. So let me just prime the people again. Right now, and then you can correct me, young man, if I'm wrong. Right now there's a... there's signatures being gathered on petitions. 848 signatures are required. I was told there are currently over 600 signatures that are in hand right now. There are to put a referendum on the ballot so folks can vote for an elected school board. Do I have that correct?
Yes, you have that correct. And it's not really an elective school board. It's we're protesting to keep a good principal at our school.
Oh, okay. Wait. All right. So then I got it. Because I know that the other thing is happening too. So you're a part of the protest to keep your kids – then I got my notes wrong. But you're a part of the protest to keep your principal at your school.
Yes.
And what's your principal's name, sir?
Dr. Stallings.
Dr. Stallings. So tell us a little about you, Elijah, before – I'm sorry?
I said Dr. Stallings. That's it.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself so folks who are listening know who you are.
Okay. Well, my name's Elijah McCullough. That's my full name. My hobbies, I love to read, and I'm also an MC, a rapper. My rap name is Young Savior, and I create songs in the studio, so that's pretty much what I do. Along with, I make speeches. I did the Martin Luther King speech and many other things.
Okay, and how old are you, sir?
Right.
I am 12 right now.
Okay, so you're 12. So you're a 12-year-old activist in East Orange fighting to keep your principle there. What makes your principle such an amazing principle that you and others, I'm assuming, want to fight to keep him there?
Well, first of all, our school has, like, many intelligent students, like, but, like, some of them needed some extra help, some support, some inspiration. So what Dr. Stallings does is he gives our students many educational opportunities. He gives some of them most of them second chances, like when they do something wrong. He gives them a chance to succeed at Sojourner Truth Middle School with out-of-school experiences, in-school experiences, events, him talking to us, and certain things. And I think that that the principle that we have right now is who can do this for us, and that this is crucial for our students at Sojourner Truth Middle School to stay on track for college and career readiness.
Young Elijah, good evening, young brother. Can I ask you a question?
Yes?
Can I ask you a question, Elijah? Why is this proposed moving of your principal being on the table anyway? Why are they moving them? Why do they propose to move them?
It's no reason, as far as we know, from Dr. Stallings. He just said that they're just transferring him.
Okay.
Yeah. So now, what I do understand, Eric, is that what they say they want to do is move administrators around, because they say they move teachers around.
Yeah.
So they said they want to move administrators around like they move teachers around, so that they don't get too ingrained in the processes in the school. And the example that I got was that if you've got a principal who's been there for a really long time, that's set in their ways, those ways may not necessarily be the best ways. They may have challenges and issues, but because they've been there so long, they know how to navigate the system in order to get the things they want, even if those things are not the best for the school. That's what I was told. But my rebuttal to that was, but if you have a principal who's working and the proof is in the pudding, why would you upset the apple cart? And then I got
Correct.
My answer to that.
Correct.
Well,
so do you get... Go ahead, Eliza.
What I was going to say is, he's not just like an average principal. Like, I've been to many schools, and I've had many principals. Like, many of them, like, they're principals, so there's certain things you expect from a principal. But Mr. Stallings is the first principal that I've had that actually made an impact, that actually moved children and affected their lives. So he's helping to turn people who might have been bad, good, and he's helping to turn people onto the train to college and career readiness. And this is important because we live in a neighborhood, speaking of East Orange, where there's many distractions, many dangers, and where it's important for male role models to keep us on point and on track for success. So he's, like, very important. And he's, like, East Orange is lucky to have Mr. Stallings. Dr. Stallings. He's very lucky because he has a hydroponics farm elective class, many field trips to colleges, schools, and we even went to a science barge. We went to Pocono Valley, the Statue of Liberty, many different things, many different opportunities that he's given us, and that is important to me and the sixth grade body. I mean, seventh grade.
So here's the question. This is a little tough one for you. Well, it may not be tough. I'm sorry. And I don't mean by any way to disparage your intelligence, young man. Right. But here's the question that I have for you, and I would ask this question of any guest that was here. So if he is such an amazing principal to you,
why couldn't he be an amazing principal to some other kids who haven't gotten an opportunity to experience him?
Eric, God Almighty.
Well,
Okay.
Well, what I'm saying is Langston Hughes would appreciate Dr. Stallings, I bet. But the thing is that we appreciate him.
Wait a minute.
And
did, did he just evoke Langston Hughes on me, man?
Yes, he did.
Oh. All right,
no,
go ahead, bro.
I'm at the school.
No, he meant the school, Langston Hughes.
Oh, the school.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But we appreciate him. And the thing is that I'm not judging Langston Hughes, but I think our school is a borderline school where we're passing, but we're like right there. So we need like he is literally pushing the school off the ground. If it weren't for Dr. Stallings, our school would be failing.
What's the name of your school, Elijah?
Sojourner Truth Middle School.
Sojourner Truth. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I personally don't think that Langston Hughes, the school, doesn't need that type of help. I mean, I don't think that their school needs Dr. Stallings as much as us. I'm sure he'll be a great principal for them, but we need him more, per se, us
I
passing.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's
so
a wonderful argument.
Did they talk to you about who the replacement might be?
Yeah, we already got the replacement. We know who the replacement is.
Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah.
And so... have you guys done an honest, in as much as you, you know, are in love with what your principal was doing for you, did you, in fairness, check out this other principal to see whether this other principal has a clear understanding of what your needs are? And has the willingness and the ability to fulfill them.
Another point of why we want Dr. Stallings. We heard
about.
Oh,
he didn't even check it for me.
Hey, look, man.
Okay.
I want to hire him as a salesman. But go ahead.
So we've heard about Ms. Burton, and she's supposed to be the new principal coming. And I've heard like many rumors about some people who know her, like who've been in a school with her. They say that she's very mean. She doesn't usually give second chances. She puts a whole lot of people out, and we'll be lucky if we have a social or any field trips next year. But just that, and I'm hearing this from students and teachers who know her personally. Even a teacher said this. A teacher at my school named Miss McFadden. So knowing this personally, nothing against her because I don't know her personally, but I don't think our school needs that.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think our school needs that. I think our school needs more of that to stimulate the students and give them more educational ways, like ways to learn. That's what our school needs. That's what Dr. Stallings is giving us. And I don't think, as far as the information that I was given, that Ms. Burton can give that to us also.
Well Elijah. I'm sorry, Eric.
No, go ahead, Eric.
Well, Elijah, to your knowledge, what exactly is being done to help you expedite your agenda of keeping your principal, or is it a done deal?
It's not a done deal. Just like Dr. Stallings said, I quote him on this, anything could be changed. So almost all the students in our school are writing letters to the superintendent and changing this decision. In the next board meeting, I have a speech, and I will be saying it at the next board meeting, and a reason to keep Dr. Stallings with us.
When is the next board meeting scheduled?
I'm exactly not sure.
Okay.
Will you invite me? I'd like so. If you could, I think you have my information, or we'll figure out how to get in touch. I'd like to attend that board meeting. But so the name of this particular show, and we do have a show called School Matters. But the interesting thing about you being on this show is that as you guys are fighting for that, Elijah, the thing that I introed after the commercial break was that there is currently a movement to have your school system become an elected board, right? So right now, the decisions that are being made by a board that is an appointed board
by the mayor of your town, right?
Mm.
Which means that the parents don't have a direct impact on the school board members who are making this decision. And the folks in your town are trying to move the Board of Education closer to the people, removing that layer of government, which is right now the mayor, so that the people can have direct hands-on with that Board of Education. So it is an important move, and it's important to understand how no matter what is going on, politics are always at play. And so in as much as you're operating on that front, I would say, and I'm there with those folks in East Orange helping them, that it's important that you guys go to the root. And the root of it is to have that become an elected school board.
Well, that sounds like the root of the problem, because we're dealing with a problem, but that seems like the root. So the decisions are more in the people's hands, not in the mayor's hands. Not saying that the mayor is not making the right choices, because he's doing great, but I'm saying a more people-responded district, and that choices will be made by the people, for the people.
Yeah, there we go. So listen, man, you are an inspiration, man. You are, I mean, and not only am I listening to you speak eloquently about the issues that are directly impacting you, but I'm also listening to your vocabulary, and I can tell you that that it is impressive, and you know, you are an example, and I hope that our listeners recognize that at this age, you know, folks can be doing more. Folks can be doing more to be involved in shaping what their future is going to ultimately look like. Brother, you know, listen, man, call me, and we're going to get in touch. I'm going to come, and I'm going to videotape that board meeting and your speech. I'm going to make sure I get up on my social media pages so that everybody can see it. And any, you know, listen, through your activism, if there's anything that I can do to help elevate and amplify your message, make sure you give me a holler directly. And Eric and I'm speaking for Eric, we'll be happy to be side by side with you, man, because you sound like the real deal, who's doing some amazing things and putting your footprint down in the township of East Orange.
Thank you, sir.
And adding on to what Eric just said, young Elijah, I have to really look at your impassioned plea, you know, if you will, a request to have Dr. Stallings remain there and really, really take it seriously because of the fact that you are eloquent, because of the fact that you obviously do have a grip on what's going on in your school and in your community. And I applaud you 1,000%, and like Eric said, anything that I could do, that we could do, to assist you in this endeavor, please don't hesitate to ask. God bless you, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be very successful.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, man, we're going to be right back after this commercial break, man. We got a little to talk about before we get into this Trump, Bernie, and Hillary Clinton thing. We'll be right back.
Most people have something they hold dear to their hearts: family, home, health, and they protect their valuables. Social Security is no different. We value the people we serve and believe the integrity of our programs is important. To protect the people we serve and the services we offer, we use many tools to identify, prevent, and stop fraud. We identify fraud by using tools that predict the chance of fraud happening. These tools help us closely monitor cases and identify fraud sooner rather than later. We also have stiff penalties that discourage people from committing fraud. Social Security has zero tolerance for fraud, and so should you. If you suspect someone is committing Social Security fraud, report it online at http://oig.ssa.gov/report. Or call the Social Security Fraud Hotline at 1-800-269-0271.
Welcome back to All Things Political. This is Eric Dixon and Eric Dawson. 646-668-2232 is the call-in number. And we just finished with 12-year-old Elijah McCullough. Go ahead, E. What you got to say about that young man, man?
That young man is tremendous. I'm already trying to put together where we're going to meet when this meeting is, so I can meet this young man and listen to his speech. You know, it's refreshing to hear a young fella that's not, you know, he's an MC, but even his MC name has, you know, some kind of gravitas to it. You know, what was it? MC Young Savior. There it was. MC Young Savior. Yeah. I love that.
Not murder, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, Savior.
Right.
Yeah.
Something positive, man. And like I said, I'm looking forward to going to that board meeting and seeing what that's about. You know, too bad he wasn't really able to elaborate on, you know, the political end of it, trying to get their township to go to an elected board. But at the end of the day, I think we've even helped, you know, his educational process to understand that that's, you know, one of the things, like he did say, you know, it's probably the root of, you know, the issues that's mm-hmm. going on in the classroom. So, you know, hats off to little our young Elijah McCullough, and hopefully we can hear more of him and see him develop as, you know, time goes forward.
Hey, Ian, when we move to this, you know, when all these things, well, we're going to keep all of the internet shows, the blog talk shows, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to, you know, I've been blessed with the opportunity to be on FM radio, and, you know, I've already talked to you about joining me from time to time. I've talked to Oz about joining me from time to time, and Veronica as well, you know, and, you know, maybe, you know, young Elijah's mom will bring him up to the studio and he and I can sit on 94.3 FM and he can talk about how things are going as they try to get their principal back into their school. So listen, man, Donald Trump, it's exhausting just saying a name. When they say he sucks the oxygen out, he sucks the oxygen out. They were ripping him about whether he was a fraud, whether he was really going to raise money, whether he was going to give it to the vets. Right? Today he put out a list of almost 40 organizations
mm-hmm.
that he earmarked a combined $5.6 million to.
Right.
And none of these news organizations that called him a fraud and disparaged his name, not one of them has said it's a good thing. They have all sought out what I think are the fringes of the veteran, you know, groups that are very political, that are anti-Donald Trump, and they have paraded them across the television stations and, you know, asking them what their thought of Donald Trump raising this money was. And as you can imagine, you know, folks, you know, they said, we won't take the money. And so here's my question. I'm back up because and you know what, before we go further, I saw you in uniform. I saw the picture you posted and I want to thank you. I saw the picture you posted, and I meant to do that, so I'm sorry. I want to thank you personally on the air for your participation in the armed forces. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, you're very welcome.
But if you were a vet,
mm-hmm. and
you
I am.
Had no political agenda, and you are, but I'm saying they had no political agenda, and you saw some politically motivated leaders of these organizations saying, we're not going to take this money.
No. Well, first off, Eric, they're going to take the money because nobody not takes the money. But, you know, go to DonaldTrumpForVets.com and you can see the list of those organizations that, you know, we're speaking about, you know, that's going to divvy up the $5.6 million. Here's the thing, though. You know, I mean, I'm sure $5.6 million doesn't stretch, you know, if you're going to try to give them 50 states. But all of these states are like it's Oregon and Kentucky and Oklahoma and Florida and you know, Tennessee and, you know, Minnesota. You know, I don't see New Jersey, which we have, you know, millions of vets. You know, I don't see, you know, big city areas where, you know, he's trying to help out. You know, and these look like fringe groups to me, you know, the, you know, Freedom Fighters of America and so on and so forth.
I think
it's like, you know, he did this to cover up his behind because at the end of the day, you know, he flaps his mouth and says things before he thinks about it, and next thing you know, now he's got to cover his behind. You know, okay, fine, you're going to give up $1 million, you know, of something that you're going to be able to claim back in taxes and write it off for charity anyway, you know, so it's not like you're losing anything, you know, as far as Trump is concerned. And then the groups that you do decide to give to, even though they are vets, you know, are they reputable vet operations? I mean, let's say that. You know, I mean, I don't see the VF post on here. I see, you know, these names that look like they could be .coms at the end of the day. So, you know, I'm not too keen on Trump, and I'm not too, you know, trusting in whether or not this is a, you know, above board in nature, because I just see and think that everything that Donald Trump is, you know, not above board.
You think it was just a media ploy, and now he's taking.
I think the media called him on it. The media called him on it, and he has to produce. And if he didn't produce, he's going to look like a phony and a liar and a fraud. And that's the story. You know, at the end of the day,
got it.
You know, he's a fraud. So of course, you got $1 billion, you can move a couple of things around, and you know, you can make sure that these fringe organizations from, you know, these rural areas out in this country, you know, can get some money. But again, does it hurt him to give up the money? No. Did he really, really have it in his mind that that's what he was going to do when he opened his mouth? I don't believe so. I believe just like everything he said, you know, he's just saying it because right then it served his purpose to say it. Like, for instance, you know, he thinks, or so he says, that he's pro-choice, but he feels like, he's anti-choice. But he feels like that women should be punished if they go through and exercise their rights to have an abortion, for instance. You know, he's walked that back, but do you really think that he doesn't believe that? I believe he believes that. Just like I don't believe that when he opened his mouth and said that he's for vets. He's never been a vet. So, you know, where does all his love for vets come from? And then if you're really going to do something for me, a paltry $6.5 million, you're a billionaire. That's all you can really come up with for the vets of this country?
See, this is the exact importance, man, of having a different perspective, right? Having someone else do the show with you, because I look at it and I said, wow, you know, $5.6 million. I didn't pay attention to any things you talked about in terms of the kind of organizations that he was in fact donating this money to, whether any of them were considered reputable within the framework of the vets and what the vets do. I didn't take into consideration, a lot of those things. So, you know, thank you for enlightening me on those matters. My hope now, though, is even if it is, you know, was intended in the beginning to simply be a media ploy, that $5.6 million somehow finds its way to some people who actually could use it. That would be the only hope at this
Eric,
point.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I believe that if the good Lord wants something of good to happen, he's going to make it happen. And if that $5.6 million, which he did say, comes without organizational fees and so on and so forth, but it's a flat 5.6, and he's promising more in the future, comes through, then God bless whoever could use it. You know, I'm far from one, you know, who don't want somebody to get help that can, you know, use the help. My thing is just, he's running for president of the United States. So, you know, where were you when you were, you know, on Fifth Avenue? Why weren't you doing this then? You know, my point is, you're running for president, so now you want to give it to vets organizations. Or you're running for president, now you want to pander to whoever you want to get your money. I mean, he mainly panders to racist individuals that are white male, individuals that really don't, you know, have too much, individuals who, you know, are business-minded, or, you know, so to speak, you know, those type of individuals, and hawkish individuals. Those are the people that he has pulled into his campaign and pulled into his bosom to be his base, you know. My thing is, can he take that all the way to the White House? And I believe, and this is just my opinion, Eric, you know, correct me or, you know, disagree if you like, I believe that if the Democrats do not get it together, meaning Hillary and Mr. Sanders, Bernie, get it together and put those votes together, that Donald Trump will walk his ass, excuse my language, into the White House because of our inability to come together on the issues. I'll say that tonight on the show.
But you still have people like Bill Kristol, right, who mm-hmm. is out there saying that there's going to be a credible and qualified third-party candidate, right? That's what he's saying. Now, you know, I was looking at some of the statistics, and they said there's a filing deadline. No. Well, if they're trying not to have Donald Trump. So you have Republicans who are saying, you know, we're fighting as hard as some of the Democrats are not to have Donald Trump. We'd rather have Hillary Clinton than to have Donald Trump. This is what some of them are saying, you know.
But I
think that that's all smoke and mirrors because, you know, the filing deadlines are such that, you know, it's almost impossible, man. I was reading something that said, you know, back in 92 when Ross Perot ran, he had 20, you know, in May qualified for 20, you know, to have his, you know, name put on a ballot in 20 states. You know, mm-hmm. and what do you need? Some 800, almost 900,000 signatures across 50 states to get this done, and you don't have anybody on the horizon yet. You know, and some of these states are already closing now, and so the idea of being able to get this done is probably just not going to be logistically possible. So,
what I saw was they're not trying to get that third candidate elected. He's the spoiler. They want to get him in, you know, 5 or 6. Popular states where he can affect the electorate, or a swing state, so to speak, where, you know, if Trump don't win that state, he can't win the election. So I see it as a ploy from that sense of them just mucking up the machinery enough so that Trump can't win the election. I don't think they're trying to get a third party candidate done because, let's face it, the Republicans and the Democrats, for the most part, at the national level, they're almost the same beast. I mean, think about it. I mean, you could go to Congress, and Congress, there is a separation there. You know, I'll be totally honest. But when you get to the office of the presidency, you're talking about Secretary of State and VP, you know, they have to be almost nonpartisan in a way, you know, based on the fact that they are over everybody. So, you know, I don't see you know, a third-party candidate really, really coming to rise and being able to win the thing. But they don't want Trump that bad. And they're willing to, you know, go through a whole other cycle and by putting another candidate in that's going to take away from their main candidate. And God bless them. We don't want a Republican. I don't want a Republican anyway.
Yeah. And so now on to what you were saying about Donald Trump. I mean, not Donald Trump, but Bernie Sanders. Some of the polls, E, have it statistically tied in California.
I believe that.
And you know, and I don't think it mattered much that the governor of California endorsed Hillary Clinton. Well, and actually, he gave a very lukewarm endorsement, man. He said, I'm going to vote for her. He didn't say that you should vote for her. He said, I'm going to vote for her because I'm not voting for Donald Trump. That's what he said, because I don't want Donald Trump to win. He didn't, you know, it was not this, like, warm and fuzzy, Hillary's my girl, she's going to get this done. And I'll tell you, man, the more I watch, I don't care what anybody says, the more I watch, and I saw this 40-minute, like news documentary about Hillary and these emails, man. The fact that this woman set up a server so that she would not have a fingerprint, that's what she was trying to avoid. So that if you did a Freedom of Information Act request,
you can't find it.
It would come up nil for Hillary Clinton. There'd be no data.
Right.
And then for her to say, you know, and then she said in earlier interviews, it was approved. It was okay. And then you now realize, no, it was never okay. Nobody ever approved it. And then when she compares herself to Colin Powell, you know,
right.
There is no real comparison. It's apples to oranges. So you had this, you had the Secretary of State, man, with an email server in her basement. And then at the end, she deletes 30,000 emails.
And she admitted to it. So you tell me,
right.
What the hell were you deleting? I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't really want to jump on that bandwagon because, you know, the facts are what they are. And, you know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It probably should have happened already.
So you
like
enough with her damn emails?
I'm like, you know, because what's happening is, let's face it, what's happening with those emails is it's going to sink her if the media does not stop hounding them, which you know they're not. This is going to be something before the election. I think there's something that we're supposed to look
at
right now.
Well, that's why Bernie's got to stay in it until the convention, man. That's why I believe, like, you know, they're looking at this stuff. And look, my daughter's girlfriend is a computer forensic, whatever the last thing is. I don't know if it's a specialist or whatever. Yeah. She's that person, dude. You go delete something, she will find the breadcrumbs. She'll find it on your computer because
right.
it never is completely deleted, you know.
Right.
And so all they need to do, E, is find one thing out of those 30,000 emails. It's wrap.
Well, they
it's
say they already
becomes
a couple things. I mean, the thing that they
right.
released was so redacted, you don't know what's really going on with it. You know, there's a lot of things that's being redacted as far as Hillary is concerned. But you're talking about the tight race between Bernie and Hillary right now. Let's talk about how Hillary is only 2 points ahead of Donald Trump in a head-to-head matchup in November. Let's talk about that.
Right.
I mean,
well, they're
arguing,
though. The argument is that if Bernie dropped out of the race, that support, a lot of that support will go to Hillary, and Hillary's numbers will go up, and the margin will increase. But I don't know.
There are a lot of Bernie or busters out there. A lot of Bernie or busters. No, I'm serious, Eric. There are a lot of Bernie or busters. They saying we are not going to the polls if Bernie is not our guy. So, I mean, how do you account for that? You know, there's no way to you know, quantify, you know, what number that is. So, I mean, that's something serious. But if you look at the head-to-head race for Trump and Sanders, it's 50-39. So here's the thing. With only 72 delegates to go, and we're talking about a week from today, 72 delegates for Hillary to get 2383, that's not a far stretch. You know, you're talking about
New
Jersey and in California – you know, alone has like 500 delegates or something like that. So, you know, that's not a hard stretch for her to reach. My thing is, once she reaches that number, will it be detrimental to the Democrat cause if Bernie does not embrace or they don't embrace each other? Let me say it that way. They don't embrace each other. Because in my opinion, I don't think that Hillary can beat them without Bernie being the VP.
Well, so here's what I'll say. There are a couple of things. The total number of pledged delegates that Hillary needs is how many? What's the total?
She needs 2383. She's 72 away.
No. So you know. And this is where they say this, E. Hillary
mm-hmm.
Clinton has 1,769 pledged delegates.
No, 1,770. No, those are pledged delegates.
Right.
So Sanders has 1,500.
Right, but the total number to win, the total number to win is 2,380-something, right?
83, right.
Right, but that's counting the superdelegates.
That's
so
fine.
So I want you to understand again, right, but Bernie's argument is that you don't have the requisite number of pledged delegates. That's his argument. And what the news cycles are now saying, every single one of them, they have now lumped in permanently this additional 543 superdelegates. And so they put Hillary's number at 2312.
Right.
And I'm saying Hillary's number is not 2312. Hillary's number is 1769. And Bernie's number is 1501. So she is literally only 200 votes away from Bernie, ahead of Bernie, but she's over 600 votes shy of the number of delegates, pledged delegate votes that she, delegates that she needs to clinch the nomination. So they're still trying to make this a foregone conclusion. And what I'm suggesting, I'm merely suggesting, is that maybe you'll have some pledged delegates who are listening to this show. I mean, I'm sorry, superdelegates, who say, well, you know, she could be indicted. She could. She really could. And she's only 2 points ahead of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump's going to fight an asymmetrical war against her. He's got a crap load of ammunition. A crap load. You see, and Hillary still has not figured out a way to address the millennials. And she hasn't figured out a way to address the independent vote. See, so all of those things are real things that if a superdelegate really looked at it, they would have to think long and hard about the decision that they're going to make and not just believe, you know what, don't matter, we're Democrats, we got a D on our chest, we can push Hillary over the finish line. But they have to look and see the weight that she's going to be carrying with her, push her over that finish line. And that's what Bernie Sanders is looking at. Bernie Sanders saying, look, I got the momentum. 3 million people in New York were shut out of the process. I certainly would have gotten a majority of those. In other closed primary states, they would have been closer or I would have won them. But independents were not able to change their party affiliation in time enough to vote for me. But if you go look at the caucuses or primaries where they were not closed, I won those contests because independents were able to come and vote for me. So when you put that argument on the table, you a superdelegate, are you just saying, I don't care about any of that data, I'm still pushing Hillary forward? Are you, you know, I don't know. But that is the fuel.
I mean, no, you make a compelling argument, Eric, you know, and I'm inclined to believe that, you know, and agree with that. But the issue is in reality. The reality is, how hard is it going to be to get those superdelegates off that Hillary square? I mean,
it may be very, it's going to be very hard, and it may not happen. The likelihood is it's not going to happen, right? But so is it impossible? No. But the probability is such that it's unlikely to happen. But what will occur is Bernie Sanders will have taken this thing all the way to the convention. He would have allowed every single person in the country who wanted to vote for him the opportunity to vote for him. And then he will stand on one of the biggest stages in our political process and argue his case before the superdelegates and the American people. Now, after he does that, if the superdelegates decide at that point they want to vote for, then that's what they're going to do. But Bernie Sanders will have said, I ran the complete race. I laid my case before the superdelegates, and they decide to go that way anyway.
I totally respect that, but here's the thing. When Bernie stands up and he makes that impassioned speech, and maybe he gets a total ovation and, you know, everybody agrees with him, and maybe he can sway some, you know, to move off of that Hillary square. Thing about it is Bernie Sanders has to look and look at the second scenario also. I know he didn't run to be VP, but I think that he would be an excellent in the event that he does cannot garner the votes to win or garner the delegates to win. You know, I want him to win. But in the event that he can't, if he wants his platform, if he wants his, you know, his line of thought to have any credence in moving forward in the United States, in United States politics, then I would definitely look at looking at that VP spot. And he did not totally reject the idea where I saw it when somebody asked him that question just today. You know, would you take that spot if it was offered to you? No, of course, I'm running for president of the United States. We're going to win, so on and so forth. But he didn't say no. So, you know, my whole thing is I think we need the populace, the population that voted for him to vote for whoever our nomination, and likewise, Hillary's people would need to vote for him also, you know, but I think it needs to be together, and if it came together like that, there's no way in the world the Republicans, based on numbers alone, would be able to beat him in the primary, I mean, in the November elections.
All right, we got 4 more minutes to go on the show. So what I want you to do, E, is just give me about a minute or so, minute and a half maybe, and argue your case as Bernie Sanders on the convention floor after the superdelegates push Hillary Clinton over the edge in terms of the requisite number of delegates for the nomination. Argue the case to me, a staunch Bernie Sanders supporter, as to why I should accept you becoming her VP, becoming the VP of a person who you said is corrupt, is a part of this system that is keeping 99% of us down. Tell me why. I give you a minute and a half, or you take a little longer if you want to, man. But tell me, talk me off the Bernie or bus wagon.
I will not talk you off the wagon. All I can say, because I'm a Bernie supporter. I love Bernie. I feel the burn. It's not that. It's just, look, bro, you got to say, it is what it is. You know, if you're going to win, you're going to win. If you're going to lose, you're going to lose. And if you're going to fight all the way to the end, God bless you, fight all the way to the end. But I'm just saying, have a plan, a backup plan that says, you know what, I didn't win the top slot, but I could take the second slot, and I could do maybe not as much as I could with that first slot, but I could definitely put that person in line with our way of thinking and what our platform is about, because that's what they're trying to do at the convention anyway. You know, they're trying to relegate it to just having a say on what Hillary's platform or the Democrats' platform is going to be moving forward into the future. I say, why not have a working platform where, you know, you're in the decision-making process every single day. You're not the senator from, you know, New Hampshire anymore. You're this guy who's one step away from the office that you took 2 years out of your life to run for. You know, my mother always said, you know, God bless her soul, you know, a good run beat a bad stand any day. So my thing is this: if you think that you can do good, and your whole objective is to make sure that, you know, positivity is moving forward, and that's what I believe Bernie is all about, then I believe that he should also look at different avenues to be able to accomplish what it is that he's going to accomplish. That $15 hour minimum wage, that is a huge selling point. That free health care, that free college, those are huge selling points in this man's platform that is not necessarily looked at from Hillary world as something that's desirable in her administration that she wants to put forth. So I think that if he wants those ideas and American people that voted for him want those things to move forward, that we need to find a way, you know, sad to say, because, you know, I am a ride or die, but we need to find a way to make sure that we don't let a Republican sneak in the back door into the White House, and that we can get a lot of this progressive agenda that Bernie Sanders is talking about done. You know, and there's my spiel for that.
Here we go. E, did a great job, man. Listen, listen to what he said, guys, and then we do have to figure this thing out, because it's not going to be over until November, so there are a lot of choices to be made, and we're the ones who have to make them. I want to thank that young man, Elijah McCall, for coming
God
on.
Bless
he was brilliant. Oh, my
awesome.
Goodness, brother. And E-Man, you as always, man. I appreciate you. Can't wait till next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
We're out.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for all things political.